Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, I'm Corin. So recently I mentioned that my internet service provider announced that 2.5 gigabit per second internet was available, and the cost of upgrading from my 1 gigabit per second plan was really nominal. It was like $1 per month or something. I presume because from the ISP standpoint, the connectivity is already there. When I upgraded to fiber, that was a huge deal. That took months of trying to find someone who could do it. And when it finally came, it was a really big deal. So I was already dramatically extremely happy to have fiber optic internet. And when I upgraded my switches, what I saw in the market was gigabit switches. The thing about 2.5, of course, is that gigabit switches are going to be a constraint, as well as any cabling that isn't sufficiently fast. And if you have anything like a computer that has a NIC that is slower than, doesn't have sufficiently fast ports, that's going to be a constraint too. Of course, even if you go for a faster network, it doesn't mean that you're going to want to actually connect everything to it, especially devices like IoT devices where you need a minimal connection. So it's not the case that you need to throw out, or you should throw out all your stuff, but a certain amount, if you want to carry through that fast connection to certain devices that might benefit from it, like a home server or an NAS even, that are going to be moving a lot of packets back and forth to the internet, then you might want to make sure that you have a clear path from the wall, and that every switch and cable along the way is not going to be a bottleneck. So I did that. I had a couple of switches to that word gigabit switches that I upgraded to 2.5. And all the cabling I had, I checked, was already Cat7, so that wasn't really a problem. But then I noticed that when you buy these 2.5 switches, you'll see that they'll come with ports for networking, so regular Ethernet ports that are 2.5 rated, but they'll also have a couple of SFP ports, which means that you can use SFP in order to connect the intermediate runs rather than Wi-Fi. So that's my question today for a home networking discussion. When to use these SFP backbone runs instead of using Ethernet. So I looked into this a little bit and I came across, you'll read about transceivers, you'll read about direct SPF, male-to-male cables that just do direct connections for short patch runs. But for transceivers, you'll have fiber optic cable. So you're actually running a fiber backbone throughout your building, apartment, office, whatever, between the switches, and then just using Ethernet for connecting the end wired devices. So my question, Herman and Corin, is, that's a different model than using Ethernet for the runs between the switches, but it seems to me to be a much more modern model. The fiber optic cabling itself is more compact, and it just seems like it carries much more data, and makes sense to me if you're getting fiber optic at the wall to continue it throughout your local area network as much as possible, and then just doing Ethernet for the final at the final end to connect the devices. What would you say your average person looking at doing this wants to know about or wants to think about in terms of the different cables that are out there? Because there's a few different types of transceivers, of cables, and when is active power required in order to do longer runs? I suspect it's far longer than anyone is probably doing in a normal sized home or business, but at some point, every cable either has a finite limit for how far it can run, or at which point some power is required to get the signal between reaches. Might not be the case with fiber optic, I don't know, but I'd love to hear the answer either way. Herman and Corin, let's talk about using fiber optic cable to build an SFP backbone in a modern internet network.
You know, Herman, I was looking at the back of that new switch we got for the living room the other day, and it struck me how much the landscape of home networking has changed. We are sitting here in January of 2026, and we used to be perfectly happy with a single gigabit connection, thinking we had all the bandwidth in the world. But now, with 2.5 gigabit internet becoming the standard for most households, and 5 or even 10 gigabit fiber available in many cities, the old ways of connecting things are starting to feel a bit like trying to run a marathon through a straw.
It is the classic bottleneck problem, corn. Herman Poppleberry here, and I've been waiting for us to really dig into this. Our housemate Daniel mentioned he just upgraded to 2.5 gigabits per second for basically the price of a cup of coffee, and that is a huge jump. But here is the catch that most people do not realize until they are staring at their speed tests. If your internal network is still built on standard 1 gigabit equipment, that shiny new 2.5 gigabit pipe from the outside world is essentially useless for any single device. You are paying for a 4-lane highway, but your driveway only fits a bicycle.
Exactly. And that is why Daniel was asking about these SFP ports he is seeing on his new switches. It seems like every mid-range 2.5 gigabit switch now comes with one or two of these mysterious little rectangular slots that are not RJ45 ports. He wanted to know if we should be using SFP backbone runs instead of standard copper Ethernet to connect the switches throughout the house. It is a fascinating question because it moves us out of the realm of consumer plug and play and into the territory of enterprise-grade architecture.
I love this topic because it is where the physics of networking really starts to matter. When we talk about an SFP backbone, we are talking about using small form factor pluggable modules. These are those little metal transceivers you slide into the slot, and then you plug your cable into the transceiver. The beauty of this system is its modularity. You can choose to plug in a copper cable, or you can choose to plug in fiber optics. And when you are building a backbone, which is the high-capacity link between two switches that carries all the traffic for multiple devices, the choice between fiber and copper becomes very significant.
So let us start there. Why would someone choose an SFP backbone over just running a high-quality Cat 6A or Cat 7 Ethernet cable between switches? I mean, we are already comfortable with Ethernet. It is familiar. What is the actual aha moment for switching to SFP?
The first big reason is heat and power. To push 10 gigabits over traditional copper, RJ45 ports, requires a massive amount of electrical processing to overcome resistance. A 10 gigabit copper port can consume up to 5 watts of power and gets incredibly hot. If you have ever touched a 10 gigabit copper switch, you know it feels like a space heater. In contrast, an SFP plus fiber module uses less than 1 watt. SFP ports are much more efficient, which means your switches run cooler, they do not need loud fans, and they arguably last much longer.
That is a great point. I've noticed that a lot of the smaller fanless switches really struggle with heat if you populate all the copper ports. But beyond the heat, there is the future-proofing aspect, right? If I run a piece of fiber today for an SFP plus connection at 10 gigabits, I am not just stuck at 10 gigabits.
Precisely. That is the second order effect. If you run a standard Ethernet cable, you are limited by the physical characteristics of that copper wire. If you want to go from 10 gigabits to 25 or 100 gigabits in the future, you will likely have to rip out that copper. But if you run high-quality fiber optics today, the cable itself can handle massive amounts of bandwidth. When you want to upgrade, you just swap out the SFP modules at each end. The glass stays in the wall. You are essentially decoupling the physical transmission medium from the electronics that drive it.
It is like having a tunnel that stays the same size while you keep upgrading the speed of the train inside it. But let us get into the hardware. Daniel asked about the different types of transceivers and cables. If I am looking at a switch with an SFP port, I usually see three main options: DAC cables, AOC cables, and fiber transceivers. Herman, can you break those down?
Absolutely. Let us start with the DAC, or direct attach copper. Think of this as a cheat code for short distances. It is a single pre-made cable with the transceivers already permanently attached to both ends. They are incredibly popular for connecting switches that are right next to each other in a rack. They have almost zero latency and use virtually no power. Then you have AOC, or active optical cables, which are the same idea but use fiber instead of copper inside the permanent jacket. allowing for slightly longer runs of up to 30 meters. But for a real home backbone, you want the third option, discrete fiber transceivers and separate fiber cabling.
And this is where the acronyms start. Multimode, single mode, LC connectors, OM4, OS2. It sounds like a secret code.
It does, but for 2026, the choice has become very simple. For a home or office backbone, you want single mode fiber, specifically OS2. In the past, single mode was for long-haul carrier stuff and was very expensive. But today, the prices have plummeted. A single-mode transceiver is only a few dollars more than a multi-mode one. The big advantage of single-mode is that it is essentially infinite. It can do 10 gigabits, 25 gigabits, or even 100 gigabits over kilometers. If you are pulling cable through your walls today, OS2 single-mode fiber is the only logical choice. It eliminates any doubt about whether the cable will be the bottleneck in 10 years.
Now, Daniel also asked a very specific question about active power. He wanted to know at what distance active power is required for longer runs. I think there might be a bit of a misconception here based on how things like USB or HDMI work. Herman, how does power work in an SFP backbone?
This is a crucial point. In the world of fiber optics, there is no such thing as active power in the middle of the run. You do not need power injectors or boosters. The active part of the system is the SFP transceiver itself, which draws its power directly from the switch's SFP slot. It takes the electrical signals, converts them into light, and shoots them down the fiber. A standard, short-reach, single-mode transceiver is usually rated for 10 kilometers. That is over 6 miles. For any home or office, you are never going to exceed that. You just plug the modules into the switches, connect the fiber, and you are done. No wall outlets required.
That must be a relief for anyone worried about hiding power adapters in their ceilings. I want to go back to the physical aspect. Daniel mentioned that SFP seems like a more compact way to maintain a connection. When you look at a fiber optic patch cord, it is tiny compared to a Cat 6A cable. Cat 6A is thick, shielded, and has a very limited bend radius. Fiber is different, right?
It is significantly different. Modern fiber, especially bend-insensitive fiber, can be routed through much tighter spaces, and because it is made of glass, it is completely immune to electromagnetic interference. This is a huge insider tip. If you are running a network backbone next to power lines in your attic or near a large electric motor, a copper Ethernet cable can pick up noise that causes packet loss. Fiber literally does not care. You could wrap a fiber optic cable around a power line, and the signal would be perfectly clean because light does not react to magnetic fields. It also protects your equipment from lightning surges if you are running a line to a detached garage or shed.
That is a massive advantage. But let us talk about the gotchas. Is it the cost, or is it the fragility?
It is a bit of both. You cannot easily make your own fiber cables at home. With Ethernet, you can buy a spool and a crimper. With fiber, you really need to buy pre-terminated cables in specific lengths. If you buy a 30-meter cable and you only need 25, you have to coil up that extra 5 meters. Also, you have to be careful about the ends. A single speck of dust on a fiber connector is like a giant boulder blocking a tunnel. You have to keep the dust caps on until the very second you plug them in. Ideally, you should use a fiber cleaning pen, which costs about $20.
So if someone like Daniel is planning this out, he needs to measure his runs, buy pre-terminated single-mode OS2 fiber with LC connectors, and make sure he has the right SFP Plus transceivers. Wait, I said SFP Plus. We should explain the difference between SFP and SFP Plus.
Good catch. A standard SFP port is limited to 1 gigabit per second. An SFP Plus port, which looks identical, is designed for 10 gigabits. Most SFP Plus ports are backward compatible with 1 gigabit modules, but a standard SFP port will almost never work with a 10 gigabit SFP Plus module. If Daniel wants to take advantage of his 2.5 gigabit internet, he really needs his backbone to be 10 gigabits to ensure there is no congestion. So he must ensure his switches have SFP Plus ports, not just the older SFP ports.
That is a vital distinction. If you see a switch that says it has SFP and it does not have the plus, it is probably just a 1 gigabit uplink, which would actually be a bottleneck for 2.5 gigabit internet. But here is an interesting thought. Most of the 2.5 gigabit switches we are seeing lately use SFP Plus for their uplinks. This means the backbone is actually 4 times faster than the individual ports.
It is brilliant. It means you could have multiple devices on one switch, like a NAS and a gaming PC, all talking to devices on another switch simultaneously without them fighting for bandwidth on that backbone link. It is like having a 10-lane highway connecting two cities where the local streets are only two lanes.
Let us look at the practical takeaways. If you are building an SFP backbone today, step one is checking your hardware for SFP plus ports. Step two is deciding between DAC and fiber. Herman, give us the rule of thumb.
If the switches are in the same rack, use a DAC cable. It is cheaper and simpler. If the switches are in different rooms, use single-mode OS2 fiber with LC connectors and two 10-gigabit single-mode SFP plus transceivers. And here is a pro tip, look for BiD or bidirectional transceivers. They allow you to run the full 10-gigabit connection over a single strand of fiber instead of two, which makes pulling the cable through tight conduits much easier.
And what about the cost? I have seen used 10-gigabit SFP plus switches on the secondary market for incredibly low prices lately.
That is the secret move. Because big data centers are moving to 400 gigabits now, they are offloading their old 10-gigabit gear. You can often find a high-quality enterprise switch with 24 SFP plus ports for less than $100. They might be a bit loud, but if you have a basement or a closet to tuck it away, it is an incredible way to build a high-capacity backbone for pennies on the dollar.
That is where the weird in my weird prompts really shines. Taking that enterprise-level thinking and applying it to our living rooms, I think there is also a psychological benefit to this. There is something very satisfying about knowing that the core of your house is connected by light. It feels clean.
It really does. And there is a reliability factor. I have seen so many copper Ethernet runs fail because of a bad crimp or a bent pin. Fiber is binary. If you have light at the other end, you generally have a perfect connection. There is no, it is working, but only at 10% speed because of interference.
Before we wrap up, I want to address one more thing. Daniel mentioned fiber to the room. We are seeing some people skip copper entirely and run fiber to every desk. Herman, is that overkill?
For most people, yes, because most laptops and motherboards do not have SFP slots. You would need a media converter at every desk to turn that fiber back into copper. That is why the backbone approach Daniel is suggesting is the sweet spot. Use fiber for the long, hard-to-reach runs between switches, and then use standard copper for the last 10 feet to your devices. It gives you 99% of the benefits of fiber with none of the compatibility headaches.
It is the hybrid approach. Light for the heavy lifting, copper for the convenience. It makes so much sense. I think back to our episode on geodetic math, episode 243, where we talked about how invisible lines define our world. These fiber runs are the new invisible lines of our digital lives.
That is a great callback. By building an SFP backbone with fiber, you are making your network invisible, because it will just work, and it will keep working even as your internet speeds continue to climb over the next decade.
So, for everyone out there like Daniel who is looking at those 2.5 gigabit upgrades, don't just stop at the modem. Look at the backbone. If you have the chance to pull a cable, make it fiber. It is one of those rare cases where the professional solution is actually becoming the most practical one for the home.
And it is fun. There is a real sense of accomplishment when you plug in those transceivers and see that link light turn on, knowing that you are moving data at 10 billion bits per second through a strand of glass no thicker than a human hair.
I can tell. Your eyes light up every time we talk about transceivers, Herman. But I agree, it is a fascinating transition. We are moving from the electrical age of home networking to the optical age. And once you go optical, it is hard to go back.
Absolutely. Well, I think we have given Daniel and our listeners plenty to chew on. This really is the best way to future-proof a home. If you are doing a renovation, do yourself a favor and run some OS2 single-mode fiber. You will thank yourself in 5 years.
Well said. And hey, if you are listening and you have found this useful, or if you have your own weird technical questions like Daniel did, we would love to hear from you. You can find us at our website, myweirdprompts.com, where there is a contact form. And if you have a moment, leaving a review on Spotify or your favorite podcast app really helps us reach more curious minds.
It really does make a difference. We read every one of them, and a big thanks to Daniel for the prompt today. It is always great when a housemate's project turns into a great discussion for everyone.
For sure. It gives us an excuse to nerd out on the hardware we are already living with. Well, that is it for this episode of My Weird Prompts. I am Korn.
And I am Herman Poppleberry.
Thanks for joining us in our house in Jerusalem. We will be back next week with another deep dive into the obscure, the technical, and the just plain interesting.
Until then, keep your fiber clean and your latency low.
See you next time, everyone. Thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. You can find all our past episodes on Spotify and at myweirdprompts.com. Bye for now.
Goodbye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.